You ever like listen to those like news shows or like a podcast where someone comes on, they're like, you know, I think
all of NPR.
Oh man.
And just like, why?
Yeah, that? There was one particular person, I don't remember who it was, on NPR that was like, I would almost crash my car into a tree on the drive into the office because
on
was
purpose.
Like, oh yeah, just to end it all because I couldn't handle that between every word.
Yeah, there's one guy on there that I feel like like I can't tell.
Where are we landing on swearing on this? Are we going to beep out the cuss words or no?
No.
Oh, anything I think this is anybody who's listening to this.
I think, well, I'm excited for the children to listen.
I think the children are going to listen either way.
All right. Listen up, you little fucks. Very nostalgic to watch that particular episode because, as listener at home might not know, that actually was our pilot. Certain scenes from that are from the pilot. And that was based on the home movie version of the show that we cooked up.
Yeah, it was actually a combination of the first two home movies that we used to sell the show. That first scene where I come over to your apartment and, you know, mm-hmm. I ask you if you have a basketball. That was actually the impetus behind the entire show. That mm-hmm. was the scene that started it all. That was before we'd ever conceived of it as a show or a short film or anything. I remember Rob coming over to my apartment and being like, hey, I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about this scene and just laughing my ass off. And you coming over and be like, I started thinking about this and I wanted to do something where we took a subject that is traditionally impossible to make comedic and figure out a way to make it funny. And that was the challenge. And you wrote it. Did you write it in the middle of the night?
Yeah, I wrote it that night.
You woke up and wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were like half asleep, half dreaming about
it?
No,
I was just up late, probably from all the coffee and cigarettes.
Let me ask you something about, this will be an interesting question because we just watched this 5 minutes ago and I can't remember whether or not we saw something that was in it. But in the one that we watched, which we switched it to a basketball, which I think isn't as good as coming over for sugar, but that the guys were waiting for you in the car. We shot a thing where you then hop in the car. Was that
yes.
it? Was no, that in, it was cut out,
we
right?
Cut it. Yeah, we cut it.
We shot that in Pasadena because we needed bricks.
Correct.
We couldn't find bricks anywhere.
I don't know why, but we did go to Philly, so I don't know why we didn't shoot in Philly. I think because we added that scene or something like that, we had to shoot in L.A. But
yeah, but the original scene, that one scene, it was a little bit different from what we wound up using in the home movie. We did a bunch of improv on the day. But then when we wound up cutting it and having it work, we then took that scene almost verbatim and put it into the pilot that we shot for FX. In fact, your performances are very specific. We were recreating what we'd already
We were. Done. And by the way, that I don't know if you remember this, but we also shot that scene. That scene we shot probably 10 times.
Yeah.
Over the course of like 2 years. We were just experimenting. We were just working it out. You know what I mean? It was like almost like working on a song.
Well, just trying to find ways to make terrible, terrible, terrible characters into funny, relatable people. And so it just took time.
A lot of awkward pauses in that scene. I was very fascinated with the idea of like very, very awkward kind of comedy, you know, just based on what were probably my biggest influences at the time, which was The British Office and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Just so much like awkward, uncomfortable comedy kind of stuff that we...
I still like that. Yeah,
I like it too.
We do less and less of it. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. But we shot that scene multiple times. By the time we shot that pilot version for FX, that was probably the 10th time we shot it or something. I mean, it's crazy.
But that episode, we jammed a lot of stuff in that episode.
A lot of story.
Yeah, a lot of story. Mm-hmm. Some of it, you know, a little bit problematic, but we've addressed that over the years. And, you know, we are making a show about terrible people.
Yeah.
However, you know, we have certain blind spots that we have admitted to over the years. And we try to ameliorate that as we go. But I think overall, from a structural standpoint, it seems to hold together pretty well.
This is a little off topic. Rob, I noticed you're talking so close to the microphone that your lips are like touching the little popcorn thing.
They are?
Yeah. You were like, you were talking like that. Your lips were like on the thing.
He wants to suck it, but it's too big.
You know what it is? I think that my...
Megan, is he coming in hot or what?
No, I can't hear myself very well. And so I thought maybe that's just the way the mics are designed. So
I don't think you're
not seeing me right now, but I'm like really.
I mean, you were right. You were nestled.
You should not have to crane your neck that far forward. You should not have to see a chiropractor after doing a podcast.
There's also got something kind of. I feel very radio.
I wasn't judging you, but feeling insecure about myself. Like, oh my God, maybe I'm
not close enough.
I'm not close enough to the mic. Yeah,
because I can hear you perfectly. I sound like I'm in a different room.
No, yeah, not in my cans.
Oh, okay, great.
Listener, when I say cans, I'm talking about headphones. That episode was directed by Mr. Rob McElhenney himself, who originally, when we shot the original version of the home movie, was not in the show at all. Just wanted to write and direct.
Correct.
Did not want to act in it. So Mr. David Hornsby, who eventually, of course, went on to play Rickety Cricket, played the original character, whose name was Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob just wanted to direct. And
let's get into that for a second.
Yeah.
Now, why were you thinking you were done with the acting thing? Because you then... You know, did obviously you've done Mac on the show. You're killing it in Mythic Quest. You've gone on to do some other work here and there. A few things, not a lot. I know it's not a priority for you, but you were on Lost. I think you said a line on Lost. I think they cut you out of Game of Thrones. The point is, though, I know you like being in front of the camera. So why was it at that age? Let's go back to young Rob and be like, what was it that made you think, you know, I'm just going to be behind the camera?
Well, I don't know that I was making that like clear of a distinction. I was just afraid that if there wasn't somebody behind, it's not like we had like playback or anything. So right. It was like holding the camera and looking at it. I was just afraid that we wouldn't have enough people.
It was a QC issue for you. It was a quality control
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Like,
but also probably, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, we were friends with Hornsby at the time and Hornsby was just one of the funniest fucking people we'd ever met. So I think you probably were like, well, somebody's got to be behind the cameras watching this thing as it goes down to make sure it's working, and then Hornsby can just play the part.
I also like, I'm really not saying this out of any kind of like false humility. I'm really not. I never considered myself like a super funny performer. I always thought I could write funny stuff. I remember when I gave you that script and I was like, I don't think I could pull this off, but I feel like maybe the two of you could make the scene really funny. And then sure enough, you did. So then my thought was like, well, why not just populate with really funny people that can make this dark material really funny? Right. And I could see myself even in this episode, you know, for the first year or two, really trying to find my way. And in fact, it'll come up more and more often, but I saw things that Charlie was doing in that episode that I know that I like directly ripped off. Like later in the season, and then season two. Yeah,
but yeah. It's like
we've all stolen each other's moves.
Yeah, we share the wealth. It's osmosis was what happens. It's not intentional. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do that thing.
It's just like, oh, I saw somebody do that and it was funny. And in the moment, I'm trying to be funny, and I just
it just comes out. You're registering it subconsciously as funny, and then you sort of end up doing it, but emulating it.
And I didn't think I had enough experience at the time being funny, so I was just like around these really funny people and was like,
well, you were always a funny guy, but you did not think you were a funny performer. Because as an actor, you'd done, mostly drama at that point.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah, but not even a lot of that. Mostly I'd done a lot of waiting tables.
Yeah. Did it occur to you that maybe drama wasn't the way to go when you got cut out of every single fucking film you shot?
Yeah, I mean, there's evidence out there to really suggest that I should have given up a long time ago.
What were those movies that you got cut out?
But before you get into that, there was zero evidence to support you being a writer-director. So
yes, even less.
It's interesting that you were like, yeah, this is going to be the thing.
Without a doubt, yeah. Yeah, no, there was no evidence to suggest that I should have succeeded at either of those disciplines.
A lot of unsubstantiated confidence in your own ability to pull something off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that. Again, I think that goes back. We were talking
show business in general. You just summed it up. The only way that anyone ever does anything is to say, hey, I think I can do this with absolute, unless you wake up looking like a supermodel.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, maybe people will want to watch my face. And
yeah, if I can learn how to talk good, I know people want to look at my face.
Yeah.
So the rest of it will work itself out.
Me
start talking good after today, and then maybe.
Movies come me way.
Yes.
I just heard Tina Fey I just heard her say this exact thing. She said, acting pretty much is 99% having a face that people want to look at.
It helps to have a great face.
She was saying it's really attractive or just really interesting to look at. It doesn't necessarily have to be like really attractive, but it's just a face that people want to look at.
It does do a lot of the work for you when you have a really compelling face. You know what I mean? When when your face is constantly scrunched up like Clint Eastwood's, you know what I mean? You get, well, he is also,
but he's also really handsome. But then you also can win the war of attrition if you're the only person that can like really put in, because you're willing to put in 12 hours a day and write everything and constantly keep creating it. And then saying, well, if you want this, then I have to be in it. Then you kind of force your way in.
That's it. Yeah. And that's what a lot of people do that.
That's what I did.
Yeah. More and more these days.
So I don't know that people want to look at my face, but they're being forced to.
I like your face. I think your face looks great on camera.
Oh, thanks.
I do.
Yeah.
I think it's more interesting than mine, certainly. I think I sort of have a neutral face, like kind of good looking, but not that good looking. And I feel like I have to go pretty big with my acting in order to remain interesting. I have to make big choices as an actor. I can't, like, I tried early on in my career to just kind of do that thing of like, okay, I'm just going to feel the feelings of the character and just know that it'll shine through my eyes. And what I saw was just fucking flat dead performances across the board. I was just like, oh my God, every fucking thing
I do. I've done a bit of that too, where you're like, I really was feeling that.
Yeah.
And really dropped into it. Then you watch it and you're like, well, there's nothing there.
Dead eyes.
Dead eyes.
Just dead eyes.
He's got dead eyes.
Yeah.
That's my Dr. Larry Myers impression.
Of talking of Ethan Hawke.
I love Ethan Hawke. He came up to me and—
Wait, sorry. So who?
Dr. Larry Myers. Larry Myers.
You remember he had the Beanie Babies.
Yes. I had gotten a job directing downtown theater, mostly naked
I've
men.
I've told these stories to each other for the last 15 years, and it's a series of
for
them
you.
Not this remembering.
Not for, it's not for you.
It's not all for you, Rob. We're not performing for you. You're not directing our lives.
God, tell the story of Dr. Larry Myers.
Dr. Larry Myers. I told him I bumped into him. He had a play called Beanie Baby Addiction.
Yeah, right.
You remember this, right?
Yes,
and
I
then,
do,
you know, it was the kind of thing where it was like 90 monologues. I was like, maybe we could cut it down to like 8. And he's like, fine. And then don't do too much director stuff. That's fine. I just need the money. And, you know, like then there would be like a kid who'd come over from New Jersey. He was like 18 and he'd do his monologue. And I'd be like, all right, let's talk about like, who do you think you're talking to in the scene or whatever? And Larry would cut in and he'd be like, I think he should be wearing bicycle shorts and lifting weights. And then his dad would get him back in the truck and drive him to New Jersey. We'd never see the kid again. Anyway, Larry stopped me on the street and said hi. And this was years ago. And I told him I was doing a play with Ethan Hawke. And he goes, Ethan Hawke has dead eyes. Just dead eyes. I'm like, I disagree, Larry.
Ethan
Hawke, one of the best.
One of the best. Lovely, absolutely.
Lovely
fucking
guy.
Incredible and an amazing artist.
Love
a true artist. Dr. Larry Myers, that makes me think of the—
now that's a director, Rob.
Of, Sweet D's acting teacher.
Yes.
Was that character's name was Dr. Myers, wasn't it?
Yes.
And that was based on Dr. Larry Myers.
You know what I do think, though? Your voice is a part of it, too, right? Like, Keanu Reeves always got a rap for, like, not being a great actor. Right. Obviously, the man is a very good actor. He can carry, like, a major motion picture,
right,
and you will love that movie and be highly entertained. But because he has this affectation when he talks, you know, that's going to not sound great if you're doing, like, Shakespeare.
You're playing Hamlet.
Yeah, you're playing Hamlet. So it's just that voice. But the actual belief of the words that he's saying and the conveying of it is fine. It's just if you're stuck doing that, it's going
to
sound.
I venture to say that people watch Keanu Reeves movies for his face more than his voice.
I'm saying the same thing. I'm saying his voice does a big part of it.
But I think it's a vibe.
His face
too.
Does
it's
a big part
energy.
Of it. But
you just like him.
Yes.
You just like him and you want him to succeed. And that in and of itself is like talent or just genetics. I don't know. You know, he's compelling to watch. There's no doubt about it. This still makes me laugh to this day. Thinking of Keanu Reeves in Point Break, a movie that I absolutely love, where when they find out that the FBI wants to put him undercover as a surfer, Keanu Reeves has, I believe this is the exact line, I could be wrong, maybe I'm paraphrasing, but his line is, and said like this, the FBI wants to pay me to learn how to surf? Like as if it's like, the subtext behind that is like, why would they pick me for that? No one's going to buy that, bro. Like, what? Pick somebody else, man. Who's
going to
believe I'm a surfer? Like,
what do they even, like, sound like?
Yeah, exactly.
Where do I even start? I'm from Idaho, man.
I'm a football player, dude. I don't know shit about surfing, bro.
He's Utah. Johnny Utah.
Johnny Utah.
Utah. Idaho, Utah.
Well, no, I don't know. He's not Johnny Utah from Utah.
I think so.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. here. It's this a character it's from
a,
Utah?
No, it's like a code name. No,
his,
thing,
that
right?
was like his nickname.
Yeah,
Utah.
I think that was Agent. His fucking name. I think that was the character's actual name,
Johnny Utah. What did he play at the University of Utah? Well, hold on a second, because they referenced that.
I can't remember.
At
I can't
one point,
remember.
Roach said, they remember they're playing football on the beach.
Yeah, he blows his knee out.
He blows his knee out, and then Swayze says, Bodie says, don't you guys know who this is? This is Johnny Utah.
Yeah.
And then they remember him playing. Maybe it was at State or something like that.
And they're like, oh, fuck yeah. And then he's in, and he's you know, and that's why. Not because he's anything like a surfer, dude. Like, the FBI wants to pay me to learn how to surf? Dude. I'm fucked. You're going to find out like right away, dude.
Bummer, dude.
Bummer, man.
Totally not bodacious.
Do you guys have any other stories about making the FX pilot that you think would be interesting to the listener? Because
we shot a good chunk of that in Philadelphia.
We did.
And then and then a good chunk of it in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, if anybody is interested enough to go back and experience this as we are, which is to watch the episodes again, you'll notice that Charlie's apartment looks like the set of a grade school production.
Oh, it looks like the Nightman Cometh
yes,
set.
Yes. Not interesting fact, that was not a set. That was a real apartment that we painted apparently to look like a set.
Actually, I wonder if we even painted it or if that's
dressed it. Oh, you mean because maybe somebody else had painted it for some other show or something?
Yeah, someone might, because we were,
I don't think
we were painting things yet or anything like that. I think it was like, go in, dress the place. Think about that pilot. Think about the budget of that pilot.
Right.
We weren't painting.
We didn't have a ton of money. And in fact, there's a scene that happens, maybe no one else can notice it, but there's a scene that happens where I'm in the street with Carmen having, I think it's a part of the montage, and you can very clearly see that I still have like the remnants of a black eye, which has not happened in the story yet, but we had shot the scene already. We had a strong makeup department, but I don't think we had good video playback, so I don't think you could see it on camera.
Yeah, the whole thing was pretty low rent.
We were finding our way.
Pretty low rent.
Rob, two of your buddies from Philly are in that episode.
Yes, Dennis Hart and Dennis Hogan.
Yeah, and they play...
They play the construction worker number one and construction worker number two.
That's right.
Yeah. Hogan and Hart, the classic comedy duo. I love it.
That is, by the way, a great comedy duo.
They've come back.
They write musicals and they...
I know they came back in the World Series defense episode, but have they been in other ones too? I think it was just that.
Maybe not. Maybe it was
I think
just
it was
that,
a callback to the same scene where they're like, they see me fighting the mascot.
Hey, that guy's beating on the Philly Fanatic.
Is that a hate crime? I don't think it's a hate crime.
I don't think that's a hate crime.
Let's pound on him anyway.
Should we pound on him anyway? Yeah, totally.
I just spoke with Dennis Hogan this morning.
Rob, why don't you tell people what my character's name is based on?
I have a number of friends named Dennis.
Yep.
And then one of my best friends' name is Tom Reynolds.
That's right.
And so I just sort of fused those together for Dennis Reynolds. Oh. But who knows? I mean, we were knocking around all sorts of different ideas at the time.
No, that is what it was.
I think that's what it was, right?
No, absolutely. You had two close friends, Dennis Hart and Dennis Hogan, who were in the episode. So you went with Dennis, and then you didn't want it to be their last name, so you did.
Yes.
So he was the shout out to old Tommy Reynolds.
And then we went with Mac, and then Charlie. Charlie was just Charlie.
I used to call you Mac. That was your actual nickname.
Well, because when we did the original... like home version of it, we weren't changing our characters' names.
Yes. Right.
And my friends have had to stop calling me Mac because that's what they used to call me, because now it's weird to call me that.
I will say the one really great thing about me not changing my name is when someone yells at me in the street, I don't have that like, hey, Kramer moment. Yeah. I assume they are just such big fans of me as the person that it can fill my cup without knocking me down a peg.
Yeah.
We can talk about the name Sweet D.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a tad problematic.
It's got an interesting etymology.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I moved with Chris Backus, buddy of mine from New York. And we, very early on, we were only out here for a few weeks. Chris is a very handsome person. I think we may have talked about Chris already on the first podcast. Yeah. We were at this barbecue and he met Mira Sorvino.
I was there too.
You were there.
No, that wasn't a barbecue. We went to a couple of Tom Morello's barbecues, but...
No, this was a night where we played that game.
But that was not a
running charades.
That was a game night in West Hollywood at Samantha.
Yes.
Was it her house?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, this was now 17 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, this would have been back in 2004.
Yeah, it was a group of friends, and Tom Morello was one of the people there. Uh-huh. Tom Morello, who's the lead guitarist of Rage Against the Machine, Audioslave, one of the greatest musicians alive. his girlfriend at the time, now wife,
yep.
everybody kept referring to her as Sweet D. Sweet D. Sweet and D. I always thought, God, that's an interesting, funny name. Sweet D. Why do they call her that? I don't know. And then yeah. I kind of forgot about it.
Right.
For like 3 years. 3 years I forgot about it. And then when I sat down to write the show, I don't know why it popped in my head. I was like, maybe they call her Sweet D. That's kind of fun. Yeah, it's just a funny
touching.
Name.
Your lips are touching.
He wants to suck it. I'm yeah. telling you. He wants to suck it so bad, but it's not the right shape. It's not
touching,
the right shape.
You don't feel that scraping against the front of your face, man. Yeah, anyway, continue with this riveting story.
Yeah, he likes it.
It's soft.
Yeah, you're in it, though. You're in it.
It's like sucking a Muppet's dick.
Yeah.
You're still kind of, you're friendly with Tom. I'm friendly with Tom. I haven't seen
yeah.
his, now they're married.
Yes,
right?
And I mean, so we've run yeah. into each other over the years. But again, like, we didn't know that this stupid show was going to go forever. I also, like, I didn't put it together that I was stealing this person's
no.
name, which of course I was.
I didn't put it together either, even though I knew who she was, too.
Then I got word from Backus, like, hey, Denise is not psyched. And I was like, fuck, of course she's not psyched because I've... And it turns out that it was a nickname that Tom gave her.
Oh,
and like so his, it was like right, their
very meaningful
yes,
name.
Yes, and I've felt guilt-ridden about it.
And you
it
ruined
for years.
It. You ruined that special thing that they had.
I know.
Does that
no.
make you feel powerful that you were able to ruin something and
no,
someone is
interesting?
I'm going to come in here in your defense for a second. You don't own every, even if it's your personal pet. Now, if it was like you were, every time you said the name, you put a picture of her face up there, like, mm-hmm. but that it's you don't own. That's not her. They're,
it is very specific.
It's just though. Very specific. And
it
I think what was
specific.
Happening,
yeah.
like in the beginning, nobody watched the show, so nobody gave a shit. And then all of a sudden it becomes popular. And then people are like, oh, I noticed that people call you Sweet D.
Yeah.
Is it named
oh,
after
yeah,
that show? And then
yeah,
she's got to be like, no, they stole
well,
my
look,
name.
Well, look, yeah, I have that issue with my good college buddy, Brendan McPoyle, which,
yes.
Yes. you know, which we were doing Whoops. As like a cool shout out. Like, wouldn't it be fun to hear your name on the show? And then like,
now it's
you know, cause,
now
cause
it's associated
the,
with
yeah,
not
the,
the most mentally strong.
Yeah, the characters take on their own life, and
yeah, and then all
Brendan,
of a sudden,
I'm sorry, man. I'm it's,
yeah. Denise. I'm Tom.
Yeah.
Denise. I'm so.
Actually, it's
I'm
Rob's
really,
fault.
Really
Brendan's
sorry.
Rob's fault. I tried to talk him out of it.
I don't even know you, Brendan. So I don't. I don't
yeah, I don't give
either.
A shit.
Is that an earthquake?
Oh, we're having an earthquake
we're having
right
an earthquake.
Now. Oh, whoa!
I don't think so. Were
no?
we?
Yeah, that was an earthquake.
That was an earthquake. It certainly sounded like one.
Yeah.
Was that you? Did you fart?
I didn't feel anything rumble, though.
You didn't?
I heard the rumble, but I didn't feel it.
Yeah, I heard a rumble, but I didn't feel it.
Listen, man, this is one of the newer buildings. It's probably very earthquake safe, and, you know, that's pretty cool.
I'm going to say we had an earthquake. I think we
it's more fun for listener at home if we've just been through an earthquake.
Yeah. That's exciting.
It certainly seemed like an earthquake to me.
Megan's looking it up.
I have been hit up multiple times, as I think you guys have, on social media about, like,
Mythic
who's
Quest,
the thrice...
Quest, right?
No, nobody's talking about that. Everyone wants to know who the thrice fan is.
I don't know what thrice is.
And here's the thing. I don't know about you guys. I have never fucking heard of that band. I have never heard any of their music. I apologize if they're a great band and they've got fans out there. I'm not saying they're bad. I've never heard them before. So that was a choice made by the set decorator,
yeah,
the art department on the show to stick some thrice stickers up there. And we didn't know it was a band. We didn't know. And now all of a sudden there's all these thrice stickers and God knows, has it done anything for their careers? Has it helped you guys out, thrice? I like to think so. You know, maybe. I don't know. Unless your music's shit, in which case you just simply don't deserve it.
Well, it can't
but
be that bad if they have fans who are reaching out excited about the sticker. So, you know, they're reaching somebody.
Right. They are reaching somebody. Well, good for you, thrice.
Yeah. Thrice stickers everywhere.
Mm-hmm, everywhere. I don't know what that band is. And I apologize, thrice. I don't
I wonder
know.
How they named that band. They were like, twice? No, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
What about?
What's more than twice?
Thrice.
Oh, that's one
yeah,
more.
Yeah, one more. All
yeah.
right.
What about four?
Twice. Nah, that
nah,
don't work.
Don't
we'll
it.
Stick with thrice. All
okay,
right.
thrice
first
it is.
First things first, stickers!
All right.
Oh, another interesting thing about this episode, which we picked up on, is a lot of our music cues that we used for the rest of the run of the show.
We found then.
Yeah, which was from a library of music. By the way, which is rented out everywhere. Like you'll hear the Sunny transition
yeah.
songs and
it's a very popular library of music. It's used in a lot of commercials and
it's
stuff
being
like that.
Used in this podcast right now.
It is?
Well, yes.
Has that been decided?
Well, Meg's been cutting
I don't
together
know. It's above our budget.
I think we might want to consider using a thrice song. Okay, so let's talk
Did
about
we have an earthquake, Meg?
No, we didn't. Somebody rolled a car down the hallway.
That's how shell-shocked we are in California. Like, we are ready at any moment for that shit to go down.
Yeah.
First earthquake I ever felt was in our editing suite on Seward, and we were cutting season one or season two of Sunny. You remember that?
You didn't feel any earthquakes prior to
that?
No.
It was a big one. I remember it was a big one.
I don't remember that.
I remember we had a big one season four when we were shooting in Culver City. This is how I remember it because, you know, I don't know if you guys have this, but my family is always like, oh, California, why would you want to live there? All the earthquakes and stuff. And you're like, you know, it's not constantly earthquakes. You might have a little rumble here and there, but it's pretty fine. They're like, I don't know. I would never do it. You know, and then my sister was visiting, and of course, like 1 week she's visiting because we have a pretty, like, the biggest earthquake I've had.
Shit, really?
Just reinforcing their hysteria.
That's funny.
Do you guys remember the first time we saw the editor's cut?
Oh.
The abortion one, where it was full of record scratches.
Oh, shit.
And like,
I don't remember that.
And we had hired like a composer for a minute.
Right. We tried to work with a composer and then we realized like, this is taking way too long.
And as like young people making something, what you start to realize is anytime you make anything, the first time you see it, you're like, oh, this is a disaster.
Yeah, we've ruined everything. We've ruined our lives.
Only because
we fucked it up.
The journey from what's in your mind to what's actually what you shoot, what it feels like on the day to what's actually there, there's a process of a different lens each time, right? It's one thing in your head. It's another thing on the page. It's another thing on the day.
You find it in the edit. I mean, and now luckily we've been doing this for so long and we've worked with the same editors for so long that now we walk into an editor's cut and we're like, well,
it's a lot closer.
We're pretty much done here.
Yeah. Well, we know how to get to where we want to be much quicker now.
Yeah.
But the first time we saw the cut of some of the stuff that we'd shot, and it was an editor who we hadn't worked with. He was a great editor, but you know, he was doing very sort of commercial TV approach to it.
Yeah.
It was devastating.
Fair enough. Yeah. But we watched it and we were like, this is real bad.
We're done. Yeah, we're gone. I'm going back to the restaurant.
You'd say a line and be like,
throw in some augas on it. Yeah. Well, I just want to talk about the fact that we did the Rick Astley song before Rick Rolling was a thing.
Did we invent that? No, I'm sure.
I don't know.
Was going
I think
around.
Enough think people that were watching the show for us to have invented it.
I don't know.
You never know, man. You plant a seed, and
you know his songs are like they're fun to sing in his like very specific style of singing. And my sister and I used to sing all of his songs whenever they would come on the radio. We'd be sitting in the back seat and we'd be singing. And yeah, I think of the kind of shit my sister and I used to do when we were kids. And it's exactly the kind of things that my kids do that drive me fucking nuts. And now I get it. I've told my parents, I'm like, I get it, guys. I'm so sorry. Like my mom used to make us sit at a different table, like at dinner. She'd be like, I can't. We had a kid's table in our house because she couldn't stand us. Yeah. She hated us. We were insufferable. And she was right.
Were you fighting all the time? Was that what it was? You were constantly battling?
No, we were loud and doing voice.
You were full of joy.
We were full of joy. Oh, yeah, we were
that
making each other laugh.
Terrible.
We were making each other laugh. Well, it was just, you know, it's like, I don't know, like my kids kind of do that. And I'm just like, can you just fucking eat? Can you just fucking eat?
Yeah.
I need you to go to bed so I can have at least an hour to myself. Get out of here. Finish your dinner. Get in the bath, go to sleep, and leave me alone.
And you've said that now they just laugh at you when you say that.
Like, yeah, because they think I'm funny.
Yeah, they're.
Because I am. And I have to explain that I'm not trying to be funny. And they're like, Daddy, you don't know how to be angry and not funny.
Funny, Daddy.
Son, I'm not joking. Get out of here.
Shut up, Hollywood. Oh.
Shut up, Hollywood. Shut the fuck up, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the purpose of this for you, Rob? Why are you doing this podcast? What excites you about it?
Same reason we do the show. It's fun.
I don't know why we still do the show. So
I have fun.
Answer that too. Oh, you're having fun.
I spend at least 40 to 50% of the day laughing out loud.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to do
that? I have a lot of fun on set. Once we get to set.
So you have not been having fun. By the way, listen.
The writing's hard.
We are in the middle of writing season 15 right now. We are, what, week 4 or 5 into the writing process, and we are avoiding it by doing this podcast.
Yeah. The writing is the hardest part.
It's the hardest part.
Yeah, it's brutal. There are definitely moments of fun. And Charlie's right. When we're on set, when we're acting together, that's probably the most fun. But this is fun, too. I like doing this podcast with you guys. I wouldn't say today's the best episode, but, you know, you're going to have your...
Today's the one where we spoke the most clearly. Like, we stopped down for a second to have an actual conversation right. from time to time, which maybe is interesting to people. I don't know either.
I just don't feel like we were that funny today.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel this pressure to be funny because we're, you know, the show's
I was laughing.
Were you laughing?
Meg was laughing. But you don't... Again, she doesn't have a microphone, so you can't tell. Hmm. We should have like a phone number, like old school phone number.
Like a hotline.
Yeah, where people can call and they can basically tell us how much they love or hate an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe we could.
I would love a live call. That sounds very fun to me.
One live call.
I'm the kind of person that when the office phone rings and I answer it and it's like spam, I engage the person for 45 minutes.
As long as possible.
Where I'm like, okay, yeah, I'd love to give you my credit card information. Can I know a little bit more about your company? And then I'd say, hey, it's not a problem that I work for the FBI, right? Like, that's not an issue for you guys. And then they usually hang up right around that.
Oh, we have fun.
We have fun.
Charlie likes to have fun in any situation.
Most situations.
He'll take a situation that would irritate the average person and go, how can I make this fun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two wars?
Think about that. That was an episode that seems like it was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, podcasts. You guys were doing a podcast.
We were doing a podcast.
Right.
Yeah, it was basically you guys won that radio contest, Max Big Break. And we thought, like, these fucking knuckleheads, they don't do anything. They just talk and listen to themselves. And they do, like, stupid sound effects. And we were like, we have more interesting conversations than those guys. And so we were like, let's do a podcast.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what this is. My face is all over this.
Yeah.
Thing. I can't stop.
Well, it's not so bad that you do it. What's funny is that it startles you.
Yeah, Once in a while, I get too close and it bonks
the pop guard. Well, also, like, you're probably your breath is like hitting the pop guard and splashing you back in the face. You're like a cat getting sprayed by a spray bottle, you know, because you got up on the counter.
There's just some spatial awareness issues happening with you. Yeah. Which is like,
You said your eyes were doing okay.
My eyes are all right.
Doesn't seem like it.
It's my nose.
It's your nose and lips that just don't know where to go.
Yeah. So your eyes are okay, but you don't know where your nose is.
I think we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What
do you think that is?
I don't know.
You don't know where your nose is anymore?
Actually, jokes aside, what do you think it is? Like, why is your face actually continuing?
Why do you feel compelled to
touch
close?
The microphone?
Yeah, what is that?
I can't hear myself in my.
That's what it is. It's a hearing thing. You did mention.
Yes, I do have.
Get
a terrible,
that man's. Oh, there we go. Loud. There, he's blasted out.
That was so loud.
Shit, Megan is turning up the volume on Rob's ear.
Oh my God, today. That's such a difference now. Because if I speak like this, that hurts my ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I would stay back here.
Okay.
Rob has hearing damage. Rob was telling us the other day he's got hearing damage. What do you suppose that's from? Is that
you said we're saying that? Man, I really delete files. I completely forgotten you said that.
Yeah, I remember that because we were talking about how our eyes are going, Charlie.
Yeah, my eyes are great. Yeah. My ears are shit. Uh huh. Can't hear anything. The good news about hearing loss is that if you can't hear it, it didn't happen. So you don't know what you don't hear. But with sight, you guys can see that you can't see what you're supposed to see. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The eagle's born out of thunder.
That's a different.
Through the night. Oh, you see him fight. Birds of war.